Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 33, Text 23. Let's take it here. Okay. You know how? No, I guess he doesn't. Are there other Bhagavatams to read the verse, or just me? No? Nothing there? Okay. Jayati Bhagavat Rupam
Yat
Aha Jnana Gocharam
Sutta
Prasanavadanam
Samasta
Vyasta
Chintaya.
I'll just read it myself. Jayati Bhagavadrupam Yadaha Jnana Gocharam Sutta Prasanavadanam Samasta Vyasta Chintaya. Jayati. Meditating. Bhagavat Rupam. Upon the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yat.
Which.
Aha.
He instructed.
Dhyanagocharam.
The object of meditation.
Sutta.
Her son.
Prasanavadanam.
With a smiling face.
Samasta.
On the whole.
Vyasta.
On the parts.
Chintaya,
with her mind. Translation. Thereafter, no, not yet. Thereafter, having heard with great eagerness and in all detail from her son, Kapiladev, the eternally smiling personality of Godhead, Devahuti began to meditate constantly upon the Vishnu form of the Supreme Lord. Repeat.
Thereafter,
having heard with great eagerness, and in all detail, from her son Kapiladev, the eternally smiling personality of Godhead, Devahuti began to meditate constantly upon the Vishnu form of the Supreme Lord. There's no purport. I'll go on. Bhakti pravaha yogena vairagena baliyasa yukta nushtana jatena jnanena brahmahetuna vishudena tadatmanam atmana vishvato mukam svanubhutya tarobhuta maya guna visheshanam. She did so with serious engagement in devotional service. Because she was strong in renunciation, she accepted only the necessities of the body. She became situated in knowledge due to realization of the absolute truth. Her heart became purified. She became fully absorbed in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all misgivings due to the modes of material nature disappeared. no purport. Text 26. Brahmanya vastata matir bhagavatyatma samsare nivrita jiva patit nivrita jiva patitvat kshinakleshapta nivriti. Translation. Her mind became completely engaged in the Supreme Lord as she automatically realized the knowledge of the impersonal Brahman. As the Brahman realized soul, she was freed from the designations of the materialistic concept of life. Thus all material pains disappeared and she attained transcendental bliss. There's a purport for this one. It's a long one. I guess it's making up for the last two. Purport. The previous verse states that Devahuti was already conversant with the Absolute Truth. May be questioned why she was meditating. The explanation is that when one theoretically discusses the Absolute Truth, he becomes situated in the impersonal concept of the Absolute Truth. Similarly, when one seriously discusses the subject matter of the form, qualities, pastimes, and entourage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, becomes situated in meditation on Him. If one has complete knowledge of the Supreme Lord, then knowledge of the impersonal Brahman is automatically realized. The Absolute Truth is realized by the knower according to three different angles of vision, namely impersonal Brahman, localized Supersoul, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one is situated, therefore, in knowledge of the Supreme Person, this implies that one is already situated in the concept of the Supersoul and impersonal Brahman. In Bhagavad Gita it is said, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. This means that unless one is freed from the material entanglement and situated in Brahman, there is no question of entering into the understanding of devotional service or engaging in Krishna consciousness. One who is engaged in devotional service to Krishna is understood to be already realized in the Brahman concept of life, because transcendental knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead includes knowledge of Brahman. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmanohi Pratishta Aham. The concept of the Personality of Godhead does not depend on Brahman. The Vishnu Purana also confirms that one who has taken shelter of the all-auspicious Supreme Lord is already situated in the understanding of Brahman. In other words, one who is a Vaishnava is already a Brahmana. I'm going to stop. It's okay. And I'll speak a little bit then continue. It's a long purport. You forget all your questions, right? Okay. Om Jnana Timarandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unminitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Hukam Karoti Vachalam Pangam Nangayate Gani Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurundi Nataranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Itinamane Namaste Sadaswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nivrishesha Shanyavadi Pastachadi Sitarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasiri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Can I get a little water? Translation again. Her mind became completely engaged in the Supreme Lord, she automatically realized the knowledge of the impersonal Brahman. As a Brahman-realized soul, she was freed from the designations of the materialistic concept of life. Thus, all material pangs disappeared, and she attained transcendental bliss. Some nice points. I was reading this. I noticed one point Srila Prabhupada made that I think that might be worthy of noting, although I'm not sure how much I can elaborate on it. Nonetheless, it's very worthy of noting. Prabhupada says that when one theoretically discusses the absolute truth, it becomes situated in the impersonal concept of the absolute truth. Similarly, when one seriously discusses the subject matter of the form, qualities, pastimes, and entourage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, becomes situated in meditation on Him. Thank you. Could you put a little bit less in the glass so I don't pour it all over myself? Thank you. Of course, Prabhupada is speaking about the mental speculators. In many places of the Srimad Bhagavatam, distinction is made between those who are trying to understand the absolute truth by speculation and those who approach the absolute truth by the descending process, by hearing the conclusive statements of the Srimad Bhagavatam from the self-realized souls. One is the ascending process, the other is the descending process. Thank you. And although the mental speculators are sincere in their efforts to understand the absolute truth, they choose to take the more difficult process. Krishna was klesho dikatarastvesham abhyapta sakta jetasam. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the path of the impersonalist is very troublesome. It's difficult and troublesome, because they have nothing conclusive to fix their mind upon. Lord Brahma, in his prayers to Krishna, also gives the example that for the impersonalists who are accustomed to mental speculation, he compares them to people who are like beating an empty husk of wheat to get grain. They work very hard, but all they get is their hard labor, because there's nothing inside. In other words, it is very difficult to approach the Krishna, the smiling face of the Lord, His personality, His qualities, His activities, by mental speculation. Therefore, although the impersonalists are sincere in their attempt to approach the absolute truth, in other words, they know nothing higher than that, therefore, by dint of their efforts to come to some conclusive understanding of the absolute truth, at best, what they can get here is the impersonal concept. That's what Srila Prabhupada is saying. One theoretically discusses. Theoretically means it could be like this, it may be like that. But there's no conclusive realization of the form, qualities, pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It will not become manifest to such a person. Whereas Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita that if you want to know my personality, also in the Bhagavatam, this Lord Brahma states, Atapite Deva Pudam Bhuja Dvaya Prasanali Sarapasita Hivahi, then unless one gets a drop of mercy from Krishna's lotus feet, he can never understand the greatness of his personality. Even if one studies the Vedas for many, many births, performs all kinds of severe austerities and penances, unless one gets that mercy from Krishna's lotus feet, his personality will never be revealed. And Krishna also told Arjuna, it's not by austerities, nor is it by studying the Vedas, nor by giving in sacrifice. None of these things enable you to be able to see me and to understand me as I am standing before you. He says, it is only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you. Only then can you enter into the mysteries of understanding me. So, although the impersonalists are sincere in their endeavors to understand the absolute truth, they have no means for engaging in devotional service. Because without accepting the personality of Godhead, how can one render service? Prabhupada many times would explain that the impersonalists, when they speak from Srimad Bhagavatam, how can they explain it? They can only give their imaginative interpretation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Just as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he was presenting his impersonal presentation of the absolute truth to Lord Chaitanya continuously for 7 days. Or was it 8 days? I forget. Huh? 7 days. 7 days. That's right. Lord Chaitanya sat there continuously listening, apparently. But actually, after 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said to him, well, you've made no comment. You haven't given any indication that you've understood what I've said. If you asked no questions, no comments, nothing, why is it that you haven't said anything? And Lord Chaitanya explained to him, he said, because I can't listen to you. Because you've clouded the essential meanings of the Vedanta Sutra. You've clouded them by your own interpretation. Therefore, because you've clouded them by your interpretation, by your speculation, I can't hear any of it. And therefore, having not heard anything that was presented by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Lord Chaitanya went on to disclose how it is that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya could not present the Srimad Bhagavatam, he could not present the Vedanta Sutra, because he already had his own conclusions before studying it, and therefore he simply gave his conclusions and interpreted according to his own conclusions. And therefore, Lord Chaitanya said, you've clouded the real meaning. It doesn't come through. Your explanations don't come through. Don't send a message. I can't hear it. Because you're interpreting. You haven't realized the conclusions of the Vedanta Sutra. Although Krishna says, Vaidaishya Sayavaraham Eva Veda, Vedanta Krit Veda Vedeva Chaham, by all the Vedas, I'm to be known. I'm the compiler of the Vedanta, the knower of the Vedas. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he simply gave his own interpretation. Of course, he was later came to a platform of unalloyed devotional service by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He got a drop of mercy from the lotus feet of the Lord, and then he was able to understand the greatness of the Lord's personality. Lord Chaitanya gave him his mercy. Similarly, there's the example of Devananda Pandit and Chaitanya Bhagavat, who is also spoke from Srimad Bhagavatam. Every day he would sit with his students and speak from Srimad Bhagavatam. His students would sit and listen to them very attentively. One time, Shivas Thakur was walking by and he heard the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam from Devananda Pandit. But he heard the real message of Bhagavatam. He didn't, again, just as Lord Chaitanya didn't listen to the clouded interpretations of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he simply understood what the essence is of the Vedanta Sutra. So in the same way, when Srivas Thakur heard the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam from Devananda Pandit, although he was an impersonalist, he came, he sat down and was listening, and he began crying because he was meditating deeply upon the personal form of the Lord. And then, while he was crying, he fell into ecstasy. And the students saw him sitting in an ecstatic trance, and because it was a disturbance, a distraction, the students picked up Srivas Thakur, carried him out, and put him on the street. And Devananda Pandit simply sat there, didn't say anything, didn't stop them whatsoever. Of course, later, when Lord Chaitanya was walking through Navadvipa and he actually saw this Devananda Pandit again, he severely chastised him. He said, "How can you speak Srimad Bhagavatam?" And the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed, His personal form, His qualities and pastimes are all revealed on every single page. And from beginning to the middle to the end, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is simply describing the glories of devotional service. This is the real meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam. But the impersonalists, they don't describe because they have no concept of devotional service. Again, because they don't accept the personal form of the Lord. Therefore, without accepting the personal form of the Lord, how can there be any service? Can you render service to the impersonal Absolute? How do you know how to satisfy the impersonal Absolute? What do you do? How can you please Him? There's no rendering of service. And because there's no rendering of service, there's no mercy. And therefore, in order to understand the greatness of Krishna's personality, one has to accept or take that mercy from the Lord. One has to get that drop of mercy. And that drop of mercy, of course, is either given by the Lord Himself or given by the devotee of the Lord. That drop of mercy enables the person who is accustomed to mental speculation and logic and whose heart has become very hard, it enables him to understand Krishna through the mercy of the devotee of the Lord. And therefore, one understands Krishna through the devotee, the mercy of the devotee of the Lord, then what happens is devotional service, or the desire to render service, is awakened within the heart. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajuka Bonoi Shravanadi Sutta Chita Gori Udoi. That this love for Krishna, the desire to serve Him, is eternally situated within the heart of every living being. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajuka Bonoi. But one has to hear about Krishna, His form, His qualities, His personality. So Prabhupada is saying here that the explanation is that when one theoretically discusses the Absolute Truth, becomes situated in the impersonal concept of the Absolute Truth. Similarly, when one seriously discusses the subject matter of the form, the qualities, pastimes, and entourage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what happens? He becomes situated in meditation on Him. And by meditation upon Him, one automatically comes to the transcendental platform. This is real meditation, not simply the meditation which is done by the impersonalists, which is to try to remove all the distracting elements within the mind, make the mind peaceful and calm, to withdraw the senses from the sense objects. Such a difficult process. Instead, Bhajahuri Manashi Nanda Nandana Abhaya Charanara Vindare. As Govinda Das says, "My dear mind, please meditate upon the divine son of Narada Maharaj, because by meditation upon Him, one becomes fearless." And then what he says, "Durlabha Manava Janama Satsange Taraho E Bahava Sindure," that one has to associate with devotees of the Lord. And by associating with devotees of the Lord and hearing the glories and the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one crosses over the ocean of material existence automatically and finds shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. So, this is real meditation. Discussing qualities, pastimes, and entourage form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that one becomes situated in meditation on Him. Prabhupada goes on to explain, if one has complete knowledge of the Supreme Lord, then knowledge of the impersonal Brahman is automatically realized. So it's not that the impersonal Brahman is not Vedanti, what is that verse? Vedanti tat tatvad vidas tatvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabhyate. That learned transcendentalists who know this absolute truth, they call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So these are three features of the Absolute. But the most complete feature, which includes all the others, is the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada gives the example, just like the person who's never seen a train before. Three people, I think he says, standing on the dock of a train station. None of them have seen the train before. And as the train starts approaching, one sees the headlight of the train, and the first man says, "Oh, look, there's a train," and he leaves the dock of the station. As the train comes closer, one sees the light, sees the form of the train, and then he's satisfied and leaves. And the third person who remains sees the light, form, but also waits for the train to enter the station and sees all the variety of the train. Enters into the train, the conductor, the engineer, and everyone else. So, it's a more complete understanding of the train, although the headlight is definitely a train, but it's not the complete train. So in the same way, when one has complete understanding of the personality of God, it automatically includes Brahman and Paramatma. The Brahman feature is the all-pervasive, impersonal aspect of the Lord. As he says, Mayata Tami Dag Savam Jagadavyakta Mortina. In my impersonal form, this entire universe is pervaded. So he describes how he pervades the entire creation through his diverse energies. But the devotee understands that wherever there is energy, there is an energetic source. They are more interested in the energies. The impersonalists are more interested in the energies. And the devotee is more interested in the energetic source. What is the source of all the energies? What is that verse? Vishnu Shakti Para Proktak Kshetra Gatata Para Avijakarma Samgyana Chatiya Shakti Uchite. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta. That the potencies of the Supreme Lord are summarized in three categories. The energies of the Lord. They are the spiritual energy, which is full of knowledge, the living entity, who belongs to the spiritual energy, and then there is ignorance, which is visible fruit of activities. These are three primary potencies of the Supreme Lord. But they're His potencies, and the Supreme Lord is the energetic source. As He says, Aham Savasya Prabhava Mataksavam Pravartate Iti Mata Bhajate Mam. Help me. Matak savam pravartate iti matva bhajate mam buddha bhava samanvita. I am the source of both the material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. E tadyonini bhutini savaticha padgharaya ahankritsnasya jagatat prabhavak palayastata. Of all that is material, all that is spiritual, you should know that I am both its origin and dissolution. So Krishna is the energetic source. Therefore, the devotees are not interested in worshipping the energy. They're interested in understanding who is the source of all these energies. And when one knows who is the source, then everything else that's knowable becomes known. Yasmin vigyate samritam vigyatam bhavanti. Prabhupada explains this, that when the Krishna is known, then everything else that is knowable automatically becomes known. When you know Krishna, you know everything. So yasmin vigyate samritam vigyatam bhavanti. So therefore Prabhupada is saying here that if one has complete knowledge of the Supreme Lord, then knowledge of the impersonal Brahman is automatically realized. The absolute truth is realized by the knower according to three different angles of vision, namely impersonal Brahman, localized supersoul, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one is therefore in knowledge of the Supreme Person, this implies that one is already situated in the concept of the supersoul and in personal Brahman. And then Prabhupada went on to explain about Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. This verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, na sochati na kankshati samaksaveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktin labhate param. When one comes to the Brahma Bhuta platform, what is the symptom? He becomes freed from all material designations. Freed from all material designations means na sochati na kankshati. He doesn't hanker, doesn't lament. He doesn't hanker for anything material, doesn't lament for anything that happens that he didn't want. He's Brahma-bhuta, prasanatma, self-satisfied. But the point is that in this state, Brahma-bhuta, prasanatma, nasochati, nakankshati, samaksaveshu bhuteshu, madbhaktim labhate param. In this state, one can begin his devotional service to Krishna. In this state of mind. Of course, this would simply indicate that from this explanation that one has to become Brahma Bhuta and Prasanatma before one can become devotional service. But actually, one can begin devotional service also by hearing. This is also how one can begin the devotional service. If one gets, and Prabhupada makes this point, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the explanation about four types of persons who don't surrender to Krishna, and the four pious persons who do, he says that by good fortune, if one gets the opportunity to associate with a devotee of the Lord, then by that association with a devotee, his devotional service begins. So one can approach the Supreme Lord without the association of devotees. But it's very difficult, as we already explained, to approach the Lord. But if one approaches the Lord through the devotees, as Krishna says to Arjuna, "Oh Arjuna, one who says he's my devotee is not my devotee, but one who's a devotee of my devotee, that is my devotee." So through the devotees, this is our method to actually be able to begin devotional service. And then, of course, by rendering devotional service, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yasu Vairagyam Gyanam Chidantukam. By rendering devotional service in this way to the Supreme Lord, one automatically acquires knowledge and detachment. It comes automatically. One doesn't have to endeavor to achieve academic knowledge and to try to become detached from this world. In fact, as the verse we oftentimes quote, and Prabhupada would many times quote, Bhagavad Bhakti Hinasya Jati Shastram Chapastapa Apranasiva Dehanam Mandalam Lokaranjanam. That if a person is devoid of devotional service, even if he performs all kinds of severe austerities, even if he knows all kinds of Vedic mantras, even if he takes birth in a great family or a nation, they're all considered to be like ornaments on a dead body. He simply served the concocted pleasures of the general populace. What is the value of ornaments in a dead body? A person has no devotional service. Such knowledge, such austerities, everything else, they're useless. But by the mercy of a devotee, devotional service becomes accessible. This is how it becomes. Otherwise, how can one approach the Lord and render service to the Lord without a devotee? But the devotee makes it inaccessible. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he offers his obeisance to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is an ocean of transcendental mercy, because although the subject of bhakti is very difficult to understand, because Lord Chaitanya appeared as a devotee, he made it so easily accessible. This is how the Lord becomes accessible, by the mercy of his devotee. Sometimes, unfortunately, people think that the way to make Krishna and bhakti is accessible is by covering it. So people won't see it, and they'll think that if I cover it and package it in a very attractive way, I can make people attracted to bhakti. But actually, if you cover it, then how will it ever be seen? How will anyone ever know it? The way to make it accessible is by living it. Then when one lives it, then it becomes accessible. Therefore the devotee, or as Krishna Das Kaviraj glorifies Lord Chaitanya, he made bhakti so accessible. Why? Because he lived it and taught it by his example. That's how it becomes. Oh, just see, that's what bhakti is. But without an example, it's a mystery. So foolish people think that, yes, we'll give bhakti to others, but we'll package it and present it in a way that it will attract people. Attract people to what? You have to attract people to Krishna. And Prabhupada says, the way you attract people to Krishna is you give Krishna. Here's Krishna. Krishna say tomorrow, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Krishna is yours, you have the power to give them, please give them to me. Wherever the devotee is who's giving Krishna, then the devotee who sincerely wants Krishna simply follows behind him saying, please give me Krishna. Doesn't want anything else. So the way to give bhakti to others and to make it accessible is by living as a devotee. And then the subject matter of bhakti becomes so easily accessible by the mercy of a devotee. So otherwise one has to come to the Brahma Bhuta platform, give up all external identification with the bodily concept of life, give up all the attachments, try to renounce this world, and then through complete renunciation try to become self-satisfied so that one doesn't hanker or lament. And then in that state, if one is fortunate, one can come to the platform of devotional service. Whereas immediately, one can come to devotional service by association with a devotee. Prabhupada gives the example. What is it? Like approaching Krishna by the impersonal way is like the silversmith who does his work with his tiny little hammer. He tries to get his work done. He says, but for the one who takes to the process of devotional service in the association of devotees, it's like the blacksmith. One hammer. Finishes his work. One blow. One life. That's all. So, it is the difficult path to engage in such speculation. So therefore, Prabhupada says, this means that unless one is free from the material entanglement and situated in Vrindavan, there is no question of entering into the understanding of devotional service or engaging in Krishna consciousness. One who is engaged in devotional service to Krishna is understood to be already realized in the Brahman concept of life, because transcendental knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead includes Brahman, knowledge of Brahman. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmanohi Patishtaham, the concept of the Personality of Godhead does not depend on Brahman. The Vishnu Purana also confirms that one who has taken shelter of the all-auspicious Supreme Lord is already situated in the understanding of Brahman. In other words, one who is a Vaishnava is already a Brahman. So So, as I said, there's a lot more to this purport. Maybe I've talked a lot. We'll just finish the purport and we can stop. Because we should finish Prabhupada's purport. We should hear everything Prabhupada has to say on this verse. Another significant point of this verse is that one has to observe the prescribed rules and regulations. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Yukta Hara Viharasya. When one engages in devotional service in Krishna consciousness, he still has to eat, sleep, defend, and mate, because these are necessities of the body. But he performs such activities in a regulated way. He has to eat Krishna prasad. He has to sleep according to regulated principles. The principle is to reduce the duration of sleep and to reduce eating, taking only what is needed to keep the body fit. In short, the goal is spiritual advancement, not sense gratification. Similarly, sex life must be reduced. Sex life is meant only for begetting Krishna conscious children. Otherwise, there is no necessity for sex life. Nothing is prohibited, but everything is made yukta, regulated, with the higher purpose always in mind. By following all these rules and regulations of living, one becomes purified and all misconceptions due to ignorance become nil. It is specifically mentioned here that the causes of material entanglement are completely vanquished. The Sanskrit statement anartha nivritti indicates that this body is unwanted. We are spirit soul, and there was never any need of this material body. Interesting way to look at it. But because we wanted to enjoy the material body, we have this body through the material energy under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As soon as we are reestablished in our original position of servitorship to the Supreme Lord, we begin to forget the necessities of the body, and at last, we forget the body. Sometimes in a dream, we get a particular type of body with which to work in the dream. I may dream that I'm flying in the sky, or that I have gone into the forest or some unknown place. But as soon as I am awake, I forget all these bodies. Similarly, when one is Krishna conscious, fully devoted, he forgets all his changes of body. We are always changing bodies, beginning at birth from the womb of our mother. But when we are awakened to Krishna consciousness, we forget all these bodies. The bodily necessity becomes secondary, for the primary necessity is the engagement of the soul in real spiritual life. The activities of devotional service in full Krishna consciousness are the cause of our being situated in transcendence. The words Bhagavat Yatma Samshraye denote the personality of Godhead as the Supreme Soul or the soul of everyone. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bijam Mam Sarvabhutanam, I am the seed of all entities. By taking shelter of the Supreme Being by the process of devotional service, one becomes fully situated in the concept of personality of Godhead. As described by Kapila, Madguna Shruti Matrena, one who is fully Krishna conscious, situated in the personality of Godhead, is immediately saturated with love of God as soon as he hears about the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Devahuti was fully instructed by her son, Kapila Dev, on how to concentrate her mind on the Vishnu form in full detail. Following the instructions of her son in the matter of devotional service, she contemplated the form of the Lord within herself with great devotional love. That is the perfection of Brahman realization, or the mystic yoga system, or devotional service. At the ultimate issue, when one is fully absorbed in thought of the Supreme Lord and meditates on Him constantly, that is the highest perfection. Bhagavad Gita confirms that one who is always absorbed in such a way is to be considered the topmost yogi. The real purpose of all processes of transcendental realization, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, or bhakti yoga, is to arrive at the point of devotional service. If one endeavors simply to achieve knowledge of the absolute truth of the Supersoul, but has no devotional service, he labors without gaining the result. This is compared to beating the husks of wheat after the grains have already been removed. Unless one understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be the ultimate goal, it is valueless simply to speculate or perform mystic yoga practice. In the Ashtanga Yoga system, the seventh stage of perfection is dhyana. This dhyana is the third stage in devotional service. There are nine stages of devotional service. The first is hearing, and then comes chanting, and then contemplating. By executing devotional service, therefore, one automatically becomes an expert jnani and an expert yogi. In other words, jnana and yoga are different preliminary stages of devotional service. Devahuti was expert in accepting the real substance. She contemplated the form of Vishnu in detail, as advised by her smiling son, Kapiladeva. At the same time, she was thinking of Kapiladeva, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore she completely perfected her austerities, penances, and transcendental realization. End of purport. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Is that verse makes me think, verse spoken by Devahuti, one thing. She says, anyone whose work does not elevate him to religious life, anyone whose religious ritualistic performances do not raise him to renunciation, and anyone who is situated in renunciation that doesn't lead one to devotional service to the Supreme Lord is considered to be a dead body, although breathing. That's Devahuti. She said that. Ultimately, everything has to lead to devotional service. Otherwise, like a dead body without, even though breathing. Question? Yeah.
When they say like a knowledge of impersonal Brahman, what does that mean?
Excuse me?
When they say knowledge of impersonal Brahman.
Yes.
So then what does they mean? What does they refer to? Like when we say like a knowledge of Krishna, then we say like what Krishna looks like, what Krishna likes and what Krishna dislikes.
Yeah, but the impersonal Brahman, there is no form.
So
there are no qualities. There are none of the features of the Supreme Lord are revealed in the impersonal aspect. The impersonal aspect is Brahman, the Brahma Jyoti. And in the Brahma Jyoti, there is no activity. One simply merges, becomes one, enters into the Brahma Jyoti. And the knowledge is that one becomes relieved or freed from all bodily designations. Physical body. Right. But he doesn't have complete knowledge of the self. He only knows that he's not the body. That's all he knows. And therefore, he comes to that impersonal understanding of the Lord by entering into by understanding the energies of the Supreme Lord, which is his Brahma Jyoti, impersonal effulgence.
And that is the first stage of Bhakti Yoga.
It is not the first stage of Bhakti Yoga. It is one aspect of the Supreme Lord. In the Brahma Jyoti, or in the Brahma Jyoti of one who's merged into the Brahma Jyoti, it's explained that in order to get there has to be some devotion, but it's mixed. It's not bhakti, it's not pure bhakti, it's mixed bhakti.
I heard like someone who got impersonal liberation, there is a chance for them to fall down again if they...
Yes, Lord Brahma says that. He says, Yenye ravadaksha vimukta maninas tvayastaba vada vashuda buriya aruya kuchchena param padam tata padantyato nadratad yuzmarangriya. He says, although non-devotees engage in very austere penances, engage in austerities and penances, to achieve the highest position, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they fail to take shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. In other words, it's mukti, or vimukti maninas, means that they think themselves liberated. They think, I'm liberated. But it's liberation in the mind only. They're not actually fully liberated, because in that state of liberation, they still haven't fulfilled the actual need of the soul, which is shelter, permanent shelter. And the impersonal aspect of the Lord is not permanent shelter for the living being. And therefore, in due course of time, in the Brahma Jyoti, one falls again from that position. Prabhupada explains that the impersonalists, they fall, and that they, therefore, they're inclined towards philanthropic activities after falling. Yeah. They want to serve, but they have no concept of the personal form of the Lord, so they have, therefore they think by serving the energies or serving mankind, they're serving the Lord, and therefore they engage in philanthropic activity, because they have no conception of service, personal service to the Lord. So they fall from that position because they fail to take shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. So that is the result. One may feel, oh yes, I'm liberated, freed from anxiety, distress, but it's temporary. It may be for millions of years, but still temporary. It's not permanent shelter for the soul.
Even though one merges in the impersonal Brahman, if he identifies himself as an individual, then he falls down. Where is the chance for him to identify when he merges into impersonal Brahman?
Because the individuality is still there.
Individuality.
It's still there. It's not lost. It's just like the drop of water is a drop of water, even when it's in the ocean, but still a drop of water. So in the same way, the particle of sunshine is still part of the sunshine. So the individuality of the soul is still there. So, but he merges. Still the individuality is there. He merges, which means he's no longer, identifies with himself individually, although he is. And therefore Krishna says to Arjuna, Natri Hatum Jatum Nasam, Natri Nami Chanadipar. Never was there a time, Arjuna, when you did not exist, nor all these kings. There is a time when I did not exist, and in the future shall any of us cease to be. The individuality of the soul is confirmed in that verse. It's always there. Soul always exists as an individual spiritual spark. So the individuality is never lost at any time. So therefore, because of that individuality, needs of that individual soul are not completely fulfilled by merging into the Brahman, one falls from that position.
Can I ask you one more question? So when soul merges into impersonal Brahman, it flowers, it's a subtle body also, right?
There is no subtle body.
Okay, it's only soul, pure soul. But it doesn't have any characteristics. Doesn't identify himself
by any characteristics. That's what it means to merge.
So when it falls down, what type of body it takes?
Falls. It takes, I don't know, it's a human birth. I really don't know what body it takes at the time of falling.
When it is in the carnival, it takes everybody according to its desires and characteristics. If one sleeps too much, it takes into a body that is suitable for that. So when a soul merges into impersonal Brahman and identifies itself as individual, then it is said it falls down from that stage. So what kind of body it takes?
I just said I don't know. He asked the same question. It's possible it enters into the body of Lord Brahma, and in the body of Mahavishnu, and at Mahavishnu, then at the time of the next creation, then when Lord Brahma is created, then he's given a suitable body accordingly, because he still identifies, having accepted, having been completely liberated, he still identifies with the material nature. So and then a body is fashioned, but immediately, I don't know, I suspect it would probably go into the body of Mahavishnu, but that I don't have a conclusive evidence. As much as possible, I always try to quote evidence from my statements, but I can't give you evidence on that particular. That's just speculation.
Any sastric examples of such sage or yogi who would fall down in the next birth, in a particular
Examples of impersonalist falling down, many of them. Vishwamitra, example, falling down from his platform of impersonal realization. Yes, Russ?
When we say that we're eternal, that means that we've always existed and always will exist.
Yes?
Because I had heard other people saying something a little bit different. I had always understood it to be that we always existed and always will exist.
Yes. Just as there's no beginning and no end for Krishna, there's also no beginning and end for Krishna's energies.
And does that mean that at some point we were with Krishna eternally before?
Well, it means that we've always were existing as in the form of his energies. There are different types of energies of the Lord. There are the eternal residents of the spiritual world, Krishna Parishad, and then there's the living entities who are the Tatashta Shakti, impersonal, and they can come under the influence of either the internal spiritual energy or the external energy of the Lord.
Did we fall from the spiritual world at some point?
There are statements to that effect that we fell from the spiritual world, but there are also statements to the other effect, and therefore Prabhupada emphasized the necessity to not dwell on it too much, because if we do, then we'll never be able to come upon a conclusive understanding. And he says those who do dwell, or those who try to argue about it, then they'll become filled with anarthas. So, but there are statements to the both. You'll find both. Therefore, it's since time immemorial, and immemorial means we can't go there with our minds. We can you conceive of something that has no beginning? Try it. Let's think about it for a while. How far can you go? You can't get to anything conclusive, can you? Can't think of something that has no... Immediately we start thinking of something and we try to go back and go back and go back. There's no beginning. Beginningless. So, even our contact with the material energy is, since time immemorial, they can't understand it. At what point we actually came in contact with the material energy. Therefore, better to understand where we're going than where we came from, how we got here. The Prabhupada says, better to, if the house is burning down, we don't ask who lit the fire, we ask how to get out of the house. One thing is for sure, we fail. That's one thing for sure. From where? We'll find out.
I have a question. Just on sincere. You mentioned how the impersonalist, you know, there's impersonalists who are sincere, and I know there are, but then I kind of think if you're really sincere, wouldn't you come to surrender to Krishna?
Yes, eventually they will. Eventually they will. Impersonalists, the mental speculators, then there's the Mayavadis. The Mayavadis are. They deny Krishna's form. They use scriptural evidence, simply to make Krishna zero. They're materialists. But the impersonalists, they're speculating. They don't know. So the impersonalists, they, by their hard labor, they may not come to the conclusion, the right conclusion in this life, but in due course of time, they will come to the right conclusion. And therefore, by dint of their sukriti, bhakti-unmukhi sukriti, because they engaged in their personal speculation with some bhakti, but some devotion, but it wasn't pure, then they get bhakti-unmukhi sukriti, which means they get the opportunity to associate with a devotee. That is sukriti, bhakti-unmukhi sukriti. There's mokshan-mukhi sukriti, bhogan-mukhi sukriti, and bhakti-unmukhi sukriti. Bhoga Mukhi Sukriti is that you get some Sukriti which gives an opportunity for Bhoga, sense gratification. Moksha Mukhi Sukriti is to get some Sukriti for Moksha. But Bhaktian Mukhi Sukriti, they get the opportunity to associate with a devotee.
Okay, can you give examples of like what type of what you do that distinguishes one Sukriti from another?
Bhoga Mukhi Sukriti means that you know they're simply interested in enjoyment, material enjoyment. They perform sacrifices for sense gratification. And therefore, they get. That's the Sukriti. They get, that's what they get. And moksha mukhi sukriti, same thing. They get liberation, moksha, liberation. But if there's some devotional service that's rendered, even unknowingly, then one gets bhakti mukhi sukriti. And that means gets the opportunity to associate with the bhakta. So in due course it will come.
Maharaj, when you say impersonalist, the word impersonalist, does it apply to the people who belong to the Shankaracharya school of thought, or it applies to anyone who is not a Vaishnava?
Well, practically everyone's an impersonalist these days. So, I mean, it's not specifically just the Shankara followers of Shankara. Right. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastachade Sitarani. Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world to destroy impersonalism and voidism, which was so pervasive by everyone. It's not that everyone here in the West were Shankarites.
So any of the major religions, they do not have any form of, except the Vaishnavism, I mean, they do not accept any form of Lord. So all of them fall under this category of impersonalists?
They do not know the form of the Lord.
I mean, right, that they do not believe in the personal form of God, so...
Any form other than Vaishnavism? No, I wouldn't say that. You know, some of them accept God as a person, but they don't have understanding of Him. Right? Some of them think that God is Jesus Christ, you know, a person, but they've misunderstood the Son to be the Father. But still, that doesn't mean they're devotees. You know, but true worship of Jesus Christ is, you know, serving Him for the development of love of God. And Prabhupada therefore says that any system of religion that teaches its followers to love God is a genuine system of religion. So the personal form is, the personalism means to develop pure unmotivated love for the Supreme Lord. Therefore, one has to come in contact with a pure devotee of the Lord in order to obtain that pure devotional service. Otherwise, it will always be mixed with some impersonalism or fruitive gain. And therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam, right in the very beginning, states that it kicks out all Kaitava Dhamma, all the cheating religions, which are mixed with impersonalism and fruitive activities. This Srimad Bhagavatam rejects everything else, all other sub-religious performances. So there's definitely some mixture of impersonalism and fruitive activity in most religious systems, even though they accept God as a person. With this mixture of impersonalism there.
You compared impersonalists and Mayavadis. So, is there a difference between the two? Are Mayavadis, do you mean Mayavadis are atheists?
Yeah, Mayavadis are
atheists. Okay, they don't accept a God at all, I mean.
They deny personal everything. They say God's Maya. They say His form is Maya. Everything about Him is Maya. They know that they don't accept. They're atheists.
And you also mentioned that impersonalists, they do not have any concept of rendering service. Then how do they worship the impersonal form? And then what is the ultimate?
By mental speculation.
Is that considered a worship? I mean.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's they're trying to understand. They're worshiping the impersonal form of the Lord because of their speculation. That's their worship. Discussing statements of scripture, trying to, about by meditation. They have no concept of what to meditate on. Therefore, their meditation is trying to approach the Supreme and trying to understand Him. But that's their method of worship.
And by just by trying to understand, they get liberation? I mean, whatever kind of liberation they get?
No, not just by trying to understand, by becoming detached.
Okay.
They have to perform meditation to detach themselves from the physical body, find identification of the mind, the subtle body, and the physical body, and withdraw the senses from the sense objects. By their process of meditation, that's how they achieve liberation. But as we describe what the liberation is that they achieve, it's not complete liberation.
It's not permanent.
It's not permanent, yeah. So it's not simply by mental speculation. We'd have a lot of liberated souls coming up. It was just simply mental speculation which qualified one for liberation. It's also severe austerities and penances.
And Maharaj, you said that once a person comes to a Brahma Buddha platform, then the devotional service to Krishna starts from there. And you said Brahma Buddha is a person who is satisfied with himself. So then what is the need for rendering service to Krishna? He's already satisfied with himself.
That being self-satisfied means that he no longer hankers and laments. He realizes he's not the body. But he's not fully self-satisfied because, in fact, that's what the whole verse of the that Lord Chaitanya spoke about, the Atmarama verse. Atmaramas Chabunayo. It's explained that all different types of Atmaramas, all satisfied persons, although liberated by performance of all kinds of austerities and sacrifices, all self-realized persons, they are attracted to rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because the Lord is all attractive and can attract everyone, even those who are liberated souls. That means that the liberated souls are attracted by the mercy of the devotee to render service to the Lord. That means that their liberation is still not complete. It's not complete. So, what was the first part? What was the question? I forgot. I went off on a tangent. What you were asking?
I was asking that you said that Brahma Buddha, after coming to the Brahma Buddha platform, the service, the devotional service starts. I mean, you can get started. That's the first stage.
Yes. So in other words, they become detached. And because they become detached from the body, detached from the mind, therefore they no longer hanker. And they no longer lament, because they're freed from bodily identification. But that self-satisfied state isn't pure devotional service. And that state, because they're no longer identified with the body, now they have to know what to do with the self. If they don't know what to do with the self, they'll fall from that position. And that's why many impersonalists, they fall by a slight allurement or attraction, because they have no positive engagement for the self. So the only part of positive engagement for the eternal soul, which has nothing to do with the physical body, is to serve Krishna. And because devotional service is not limited by the body. Devotional service is the activity of the soul. Right? What is that verse? I've quoted so many times. Vishikena Vishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Rujata. Sava Paravinir Muktam Tat Parat Vena Nirmalam. Vishikena Vishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Rujata. That when one engages devotional service, what happens? Sava Padavinir Moktam. He becomes freed from all kinds of upadis, all kinds of designations. And then his senses become completely controlled. All right. These are the two byproducts that automatically come by being engaged in the meaningful activity of devotional service. But if one simply controls his senses and detaches himself from his body, but if he doesn't have any positive engagement in devotional service, then what does he do? I'm eternal, okay. Who am I? What do I do? What's next? There's got to be something to do now that I know that I'm not the body. What do I do? Oh, bliss. Yeah, I'm just going to enjoy. But that's not complete. Because the living entity, although it's by nature is meant to experience pleasure, the pleasure that comes from impersonal realization is like a drop of water compared to the ocean of pleasure of devotional service. Right? So it's not really fully satisfying to the self. And in due course of time, you know, one's going to say, you know, boy, I've been here for millions of years. I wonder what's going on in the material world. I got to do something. So devotional service is complete for the soul. It's complete engagement eternally.
So if a person is not at the Brahma Bhuta platform, he will never be attracted to rendering service to Krishna?
No, that's what I explained before. Even if he's not on the Brahma Bhuta platform, he could become attracted by a devotee, association with a devotee.
So after that, he can come to the Brahma Bhuta platform.
Yeah. In other words, that's what Lord Chaitanya came, when we said that Lord Chaitanya came to make devotional service accessible, that means Lord Chaitanya didn't set any conditions. As Krishna set conditions. First you surrender, then I'll deliver you from sinful reaction. But Lord Chaitanya did this. Lord Chaitanya took the first step. He didn't set any conditions. He just distributed freely and said, okay, here, mercy, take it. All you have to do is take it. That's your only qualifications, to take it. There's no conditions, no surrender. Just take it. So that is what a devotee does. He makes bhakti accessible, says, take it. As soon as you take it, your devotional service begins. As soon as you take it. So that is the beauty of bhakti, and of course it's the beauty of when such great devotees of the Lord come to this world and give us devotional service. Krishna himself says, by the dust of the lotus feet of my pure devotees, I desire to purify the entire material world which is situated within me. And thus I follow in the footsteps of my devotees, who are always free from selfish activities, who are always inclined to speak about Krishna and give Krishna to others, equally disposed towards everyone. Krishna says, this is how I purify the material world, by my devotees. And therefore I even follow behind them and take their dust. That's how bhakti becomes accessible. So we don't have to come to the Brahma Bhuta platform before we can begin devotional service, by the mercy of a devotee who gives it and makes it accessible. And then we can gradually, by continuously engaging in devotional service, one not only becomes Brahma Bhuta, but he becomes situated in devotional service. Automatically, Brahma Bhuta is. Okay. I'm going to stop. I have to go to Boston today.